On this episode of The Playbook, I have an unbelievable entrepreneur, the CEO of Diva Curl, Robert Schaeffler. And what I found most intriguing is how he sees mentorship as a two-way street and how he has evolved since the age of 15, born in Germany, to one of the leading young entrepreneurs in America.
This is Entrepreneurs The Playbook, where each week I bring you some of the greatest athletes, celebrities, and entrepreneurs to talk about their personal and professional playbook to success and what made them champions on the field and in the boardroom. I'm your host and CEO of Sports One Marketing, David Meltzer.
This is Dave Meltzer with Entrepreneurs The Playbook, and I am excited to be here with Robert Schaeffler. You are the senior CEO?
CEO.
Since December?
Yes.
Of Diva Curl.
Exactly.
And I love this brand and I love this space because this is for entrepreneurs and it's the playbook for entrepreneurs. And as I learned about you, you really almost were one of these guys that was born an entrepreneur.
Yeah, that's a big compliment.
The spirit in you. Like the
that's
spirit
a big compliment.
Of entrepreneurship.
That's a really big compliment. Yeah, I mean, all my life, all my career, really just love being in that space where you can create something, turn it into something new, spin it another way, and I just love building. That's creating piece is just, that gets me excited.
And the other piece that's interesting that I think most entrepreneurs discount is it's not just the persistent creating, you know, this kind of innovative side, but it's the leadership side, the confidence side that I think, you know, since you've been 15 years old, I'm, you know, kind of reading about you and learning going, man, that's a lot of confidence to be 15 and, you know, do what you did. Where do you think that characteristic comes from? You have older brothers or a mom?
I actually, honestly, born in the family. So both parents, entrepreneurs, but most importantly, I actually have an older brother who set out about, he was 13 years old, and he said, what is going on in my space? And he was throwing a few parties here and there, and he found out all those people around him, they didn't have proper equipment for their parties. So he's like, let me rent out, speakers and stuff like that. And he started charging a dollar or two for each party. He's like, I'm gonna bring my speaker set, I'm gonna bring my DJ set. Today he has like a multi-million dollar event company, all built from like 13 years old, renting out his little DJ set. And you know, that for me, and he's about 3 years older than me, I was 10 years old, I was like, oh my God, that's impressive. He started out in our little garage, he took it into this huge office these days, he's just like all over the world throwing events, and that was always impressive to me. So to me, I'm always looking up to someone who's even more entrepreneurial than myself.
And through your career today, you still have mentors that you look up, and has that enabled you to shift spaces so easily? Because you really have changed. In one of the things I pride myself on is like, you know, from technology, you know, at the highest level to sports at the highest level, now media.
Right.
I work at the highest level. You've done the same thing in your career.
Yeah, I think I've always looked for sort of people that are, you know, 2-3 steps ahead of me and have done it, and I want to learn from them. I think that mentorship is such a big part of this. If you can find someone that really takes you under their wing and shows you the way, that's so powerful. So I've been very lucky, for example, the CEO of my former company, you know, there's 50,000 people in this company, but we still have a personal connection and he still, you know, takes my call. If I have an issue and I just want to bounce it off someone, he will still talk to me day and night. And it's a very powerful thing. So absolutely, mentors, I think, are part of your career and you should really go for those.
Now, Robert, I'm gonna ask you a really basic question. So we'll get to the difficult ones,
right.
But this is basic, but it's one of the most asked questions about mentorship, right? Mm-hmm. I always think that if I can teach people two things, to ask how I can be of value or service,
right,
which we'll get into for your product because you address that need, mm-hmm, but more importantly, do you know anyone or have anything that can help me? Mm-hmm. A lot of people have a problem. How do I ask someone, right? They think that they're somehow separate from the people that sit in the situation. Your 50,000 person company, 49,990 of them will never ask the CEO for help.
Correct.
How would you give that advice to ask?
I mean, it starts with asking for advice and having the confidence to know what's the worst thing that could happen, right? If you ask someone for help, 9 out of 10 times people are gonna say, absolutely, I wanna help you. How can I be of service? I think it starts with asking for help. And then the second thing is understanding, putting yourself in the shoes of someone else. A lot of the folks that we are thinking about as potential mentors get a ton of requests. They get so much inbound. And you have to figure out, how can I be of value to them in this relationship? If it's just one-sided and you're the mentee and you're getting all of this advice, that is probably not a relationship that will last and be sustainable. You got to figure out what's in it for the mentor. So in this sense, for example, for the CEO of this company that I'm referring to, we do some reverse mentorship as well. He asked me about social media. He asked me about the latest things in e-com. He asked me about things that are happening in Asia because I got to spend a lot of time there. And so I also am adding value to this relationship from my side. And I think that's how you make mentorship last. You have to think of it as a two-way street.
It's interesting you say that because I run into so many mentors that end up in great leadership positions like yourself, running extraordinary companies that started out and they'll say, well, you know, how did this develop? They'll say, well, you know, I offered to babysit, right? You know, as a teenager and I offered to babysit for Sidney Frank.
Right.
And, you know, started learning and he bought, you know, he created Grey Goose Vodka. And then I was like, hey, can you help me? I'd like to start in marketing. And I ended up being VP of marketing of the biggest, you know, and then we were bought by Bacardi and it goes on and on. But it starts with that initial, how can I be of service? And when people tell me all the time, you know, what I'm young, what value can I bring? But like you said, you have, especially today with the need for social media, you can be 17 to 24 and, you know, I'm an old geezer. You know, look at the guys around me. I'm asking these guys. Sure, I have great traditional business advice. I can have relationship capital. But look, to be honest, my Instagram, right, that content, those are guys that are much younger and women, especially that are much younger than me that are telling me, Dave, you know, and it's hard for me, you know, put up a video, I'm like, kids are going to watch me on the video, but yet it changes lives. We don't take all of our business to the point of changing lives. We do have the advantage of amplifying it today on social media. Yeah. But the number one word that comes up on social media is authenticity.
Yeah.
Finding your own frequency. Mm. Your brands, and I'm not saying just DivaChrome, but the previous brands as well, you really get authenticity and how it directly affects influencing people more than saying, I'm just going to get Kim Kardashian or Jessica Alba to put their name on my product. Can you explain the difference between an influencer and authenticity?
Yeah. I feel very passionate about this word influencer. I even think that the word influencer has just such a, by now, sort of a negative connotation to it. If you think about it, influencing means I'm getting you to do something potentially that you didn't even want to do. I think that already, if you were thinking about, I'm going to pay someone to amplify my message that doesn't have an organic connection with a product or a service, that just doesn't feel completely right to me. And I think that's where the big companies right now are kind of misstepping versus the indie brands. The indie brands are born in social media. They're born from the fact that they have a connection, natural connection with a consumer versus then the big brands showing up and saying, well, I figure out there's an influencer thing. Okay, she has X amount of followers. I'm going to pay her Y and she's going to talk about my product. People can tell nowadays. I mean, it's been a couple years of this trend going on, and I think they can tell if you're just paying someone to do that. Because the next week they're going to endorse another product. So going back to authenticity, I think you really got to go to the root of who is naturally connected to your product. So I'll give you an example. For example, in Brazil right now, we have some of the biggest soap opera stars in the country endorsing our product on social media because they love the product. Some of them have 40 million followers. 40 million. I have to ask my young guys out there. Are you sure it's 40?
Right.
That's like Selena Gomez kind of level, right? No, she has 40 million followers, and she naturally just loves the product. So our next step there is let's figure out why she loves the product. Let's have a conversation with her. Let's supply her with free product. We're not paying her to do that. Let's build a relationship. And I think that's what most brands get wrong. Influencers are normal people on social media. You got to have an organic relationship with them, and then people can tell that the content they produce is also very organic.
It's interesting too, because in the sports world, people wanted to get athletes,
right?
And I would say that's so obsequious to get, you know, a Hall of Fame quarterback to talk about this. I said, why not go ahead and let's go sample? So like Monster was one of my clients early on. I said, here's what we're going to do. Let's give them all free headsets in the locker room. Right. So at the very least, the guys who like them, you're going to get every time they get off the bus when millions of people are watching the game, you're going to have your Beats brand.
Genius.
Right there. And then even better than that, what I didn't realize early on in the influencer game was that these guys, because they were giving it for free, would call and ask, hey, can I get this? I really love this. And now it's authentic.
100%.
Right?
This is exactly the kind of relationship we're having now with people. You want to start a conversation with them, right? So you're sending them free product. They already love your stuff. They give you feedback. And then they're, by the way, for my best friend, do you have a gel that's even higher hold? hey, maybe we don't even have it. Let me make one just for you. Right. And then all of a sudden she's tweeting about it like, my God, I just got this unique product from Diva Curl. It's just for me. Those are the little things that I think make the difference.
And to me, having an indie product today, because you had it in the old traditional sense, is so much more powerful. In fact, my brand itself was built off of the exact same idea that, you know, I had represented the Steve Youngs, Troy Aikman, and Evander Holyfields of the world. I'd worked in the big names. And all of a sudden I saw this transition where, you know, there's 4 billion people and growing. Mm-hmm. And never before, if you could send out a frequency, like only for to start a brand, and if you were just in New York City, the exposure is so difficult to say, hey, you got curly hair,
right.
Here's the issues for curly, and we actually have a product that works, so it'll go viral by word of mouth, but now we can instantly reach that message, that frequency to a select group, yep. And we actually can advertise against only people with curly hair.
So that is exactly, I think, why we exist and why we're so successful and why you are going to see many more of these small indie brands coming to the market is the barriers of entries have come down so significantly. Now today, it used to be if you wanted to be a $100 million brand in our space, you had to be with one of the big guys because you couldn't afford to pay for the, you know, right. The big spot on TV,
the co-marketing,
and all of this stuff. You couldn't go to all the events and stuff. And now if you just think about it, it's all grassroots. We have an event, for example, in Brooklyn called Curl Fest, where 35,000 curly girls get together. That is basically our core audience, and it doesn't cost you a lot to go there. You just got to have the right social media game. You got to have samples. You got to have the right message, and you have a really engaged audience. A couple years ago, it would have been only big brands that could afford to do that.
You know, and I found it interesting being on the sponsorship side. Mm. So small brands like yours could really never participate either on the sponsorship side, where now, like, we'll even have the red carpets and the other things that we do that go in the part of the deal will be, hey, we're going to put this in to get the studio ready, et cetera.
Right.
And then those will be in the gift bags and all that other shit. Oops, sorry, right. Stuff as well.
Yeah.
And it's amazing to me because that never could have happened before. It was always, you know, the big brands would put their signage and it was so obvious.
Right.
Right. The stage at Miss America was like a commercial.
Right.
Right, and all the great CEOs would sit in front, and everybody would think. And one question I have real quick, I love the playbook, because I deal with this all the time. Signage, digital signage, branding. Mm. We really don't know if that's why people went and bought your product. Because
right.
McDonald's is in every stadium, and I never know, like, is that worth hundreds of thousands of dollars?
Exactly.
Like, are people really buying the Happy Meal still because that's there? Is it worth that money? And if your company put up a big sign at the stadium, it would be no value at all.
Exactly. That's why we don't do any of that stuff. If you think about it, nowadays, we have our own website that does really well with our products. Nowadays, I can A-B test anything. If I put a message out on Facebook and it says, hey guys, this is the new product versus that, and I know it in an instant whether that message resonates and whether it actually leads to a sale, and then I put my money into the one that actually drives the sale and that makes the consumer happy, right? So that's going back to your point about large events and investing in that. It's really just so beautiful right now how targeted you can get.
And targeting is also, there's 5 stages. First, you stimulate interest easier. Mm-hmm. You transition that interest, meaning the A-B testing. Then you have a shared vision. But where it's really interesting to me is the power of where if I bought your product for my 3 girls who all have this type of hair, it takes a while for them to go tell their friends at school. Mm-hmm. And it's still limited to that.
Right.
Where now, you don't know where that gatekeeper is going to be, but instantly the managing and developing of the vision, mm-hmm. which costs so much money in the past, mm-hmm. that when you have an authentic idea
right.
that actually performs,
right.
which is really crucial.
Right.
Like, there's 2 parts of performing, the customer service side that you're delivering it in the packaging and the execution that
right.
you can, but also, hey, this is better than they even said.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That, I always say that's the Apple secret.
Yeah.
Right? You look at the EarPods and you're like, I'm not going to try those, but then these guys come in your office, it's like, Dave, you need to buy these.
Exactly.
They're selling.
Yeah.
Do you work for Apple or for me, bro?
Exactly. Yeah, they're the original influencers.
And that's what
right.
Diva Curl, like, you know, just in all honesty, like my girls, I told them where I was going today, and normally they're bored because it's
right.
a sporting event. And they're like, you know, when I met with Lululemon and I met with you, they're like, really?
Yeah.
So you have this brand that knows people who need you.
You're hitting on one other thing of authenticity. I mean, you can make a promise, you can have a connection to a consumer, but only if you make true on that promise, if that product really performs, are you going to get repeat purchase. I think there's another way, you know, today now you have a bunch of indie brands popping up and they have a lot of success in initial buy-in. the ones that really stick around are the ones who have a truly awesome product that performs. And I think that's sort of the magic juice of this. You know, we don't have the prettiest packaging in the world, honestly, but we put all of our money in the juice inside because it needs to perform. And so, you know, with your little girls, you know exactly, like, they have all of these topics, these challenges with their hair. But if they use the right product and have the right education, they're going to be happy. And if you have a happy consumer, they're going to come back.
And that starts from the founder down. Mm. And I know we were joking that I could have been the founder of my company because of my relationship of how this was born with, you know, a nice Jewish girl with the, right, the Jewish curls.
Yeah.
But moreover, he's very pragmatic. And one of the things that I'm having signed for my Playbook Hall of Fame,
yeah,
is you gave me this hand and I'm going to grab it.
Right.
Because I think it is an authenticity thing where you gave me and asked me what this was. I said a hair massager, but it's actually a tool,
right,
that goes on a hair dryer, because in order to dry curly hair, your owner, who has more experience with curly hair than anyone, said, how was the best way? And yeah, said, what if my hand was a hair dryer?
Exactly.
And then went to Home Depot.
And built this. Yeah,
built this.
And has it patented and trademarked and made in Brazil. And now I think it's made around the globe. And it's kind of our signature piece. I think that goes back to entrepreneurship.
Is there a name for it, by the way?
This is a Diva Fuser.
The Diva Fuser. Not right? The hand. Sorry.
No, but a lot of our people call it the hand, so that's totally fine. I think this goes back to, you know, really understanding a consumer at a deeper level. I don't think a big corporation that does everything to everyone could have understood the curly girl that way and would have come up with something like this. He focused on just one part of the market, and he wanted to just be there for her, and that's what comes out of that. I think that entrepreneurs, one lesson there is just be focused on solving one issue. Don't try to solve world problems. Try to solve one.
And to one audience. You don't exactly have to serve everyone. You know, I call that the Kmart problem. Mm. Is you had, you know, Target was the designers, mm-hmm, and a little bit higher price, but they were very specific. Then you had Walmart was just low price.
Exactly.
Right? No designer. And if they tried to do everything, they would have been Kmart, who ended up going bankrupt, and then buying Sears, trying the same strategy, and now going bankrupt again.
Yeah, I think everyone who's generic, I mean, really, there is no more space for you. You have to be targeted and specific. Audience today can tell if you're trying to be everything to everyone. So, you know, I have a lot of respect for the, you know, brands that have been around for hundreds of years, but they try to launch curly brands. They're like, oh, this seems like an interesting market. Let me also launch a curly line. Curly girls can tell that, oh, this is just your side business. You're not focused on me. They want something that's just for them. And that's why the brands that are really just focused on her are successful with stuff like this.
And I think that's true in so many other industries as well. You know, look at food, for example.
Oh, 100%.
Right? When those, you know, those burger brands try to do chicken and fish and, you know, wraps and everything, you just get killed.
Right.
Where you have these other brands like Chicken Salad Chick,
right,
that's just growing out of control, or the acai bowl that's right, specific to one
you
thing.
Want one brand that, I think people know exactly now when you're trying to fake it and you're like, oh, I'm also this, I'm also the fish brand, I'm also the meat brand. No, you can't do that. You have to be one thing. And so one thing that I've been extremely proud of is this brand is 25 years old, but it's extremely pure. It's extremely targeted. And now with social media, like, now it's perfect. We're in the middle of this flywheel. We are targeted. We can target now through social media, and we're getting a bigger and bigger audience every year.
That's awesome. Now, last question as an entrepreneur. You were kind of born into it, both parents, the older brother,
right,
great example. You had a fever for it.
Yeah.
And now you're a young CEO of a thriving company, and the space is growing, and you have this great career. One of the things, you know, as a young CEO that I had was a fear of loss.
Yeah.
Right? And, you know, where am I going to be? Because one of my biggest, I retired in my 30s.
Yeah.
And it was the dumbest thing I've ever done. And what always scared me when I went back to work with Lee Steinberg and I, you know, made my money back and all the things that I did correctly, you know, my wife is like, well, you know, someday, you know, I want you to spend more time with me. And I'm like, oh my gosh.
Right.
Like, I can't stop what I'm doing. What's your strategy? Because you're the same type of person that I am.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to have to do this the rest of your life.
Absolutely.
How do you plan for that at your age? Because so many entrepreneurs out there that are successful, still, they're never addressed this question. All right, how can I continue to keep a better balance in my life?
Yeah.
When I'm 50, 60, or even 70, but still, I got to feed the hunger.
Yeah, exactly. I think you can't, I mean, you can't think about it as a sprint. You have to think about it as a marathon. I know I want to be doing this until probably the day I'm no longer here. So I'm thinking in small little segments. I think in about next 24 months, what is my life? What's my career like in the next 24 months? Probably beyond that, I can't influence. I don't know where I will be in 24 months, but I know I dedicate myself to one thing, focus incredibly hard on this, make it the best it can be. And then I see where my next segment is. I think if you try too hard to think, okay, in 10 years from now, I want to be here, in 20 years, I don't think you can do that. Our world is changing so fast. So I think one thing is almost slowing down to speed up is think in segments, think ahead in small little things you want to accomplish, and don't try to just run so hard and burn out. I think balance is incredibly hard in our lives. We have families, we have, you know, hobbies. We barely get time for those. But the lesson I've learned is you got to incorporate them in your daily life. You can't think, okay, I'm going to do this for 2 years, sell a company, and then I'm going to, you know, do nothing for 6 months. That doesn't work. You and I know that. We want to be working
again.
So if you know, if you love working out, if you have a hobby, if you love spending time with someone, make that part of your daily life instead of thinking, I'll get to it one day. I have seen many people who never get to it, and then they're very sad at the end of their life that they didn't do that. So make it part of everyday life.
That's awesome. And you've really reiterated some of the greatest lessons that I like to teach. Number one, find your frequency, be authentic. And then the last one, you really enjoy the consistent everyday, persistent without quit pursuit of your potential, whatever that truth is, to more of a present state of mind, and you're allowing your future to unravel, but with this productivity and accessibility that you have. And, you know, I applaud you because I get to meet so many different extraordinary people and entrepreneurs, and I'm looking forward to a long-term relationship and co-mentorship, by the way,
because I think you
could teach me a few things about branding authenticity that I certainly need, and hopefully traditionally I can help with some of the things that I've learned on the marketing side.
I would love that, and we'll get you to use the Diva Fuser.
Yeah, look, my girls will use it. I'm just trying to hang on to my hair, so yeah. I'm a huge Rogaine client. They have found my frequency. Anyway, this is Dave Meltzer. Just enjoying myself here with Robert Scheffler, CEO of Diva Curl with Entrepreneurs, The Playbook. Well, I hope you enjoyed this week's episode of The Playbook as much as me. On a personal note, I just wanted to thank everyone for making The Playbook such a success. Don't forget to continue it by sharing, subscribing, and listening to your favorite episodes. This is Dave Meltzer with The Playbook.